We are 2 months away from the first votes being cast in the Democratic presidential primary, and some election experts say we are still not prepared to handle potential cyber attacks on the country's election system. My next guest says the interference that happened in 2016 is not limited to that election. David Salvo is deputy director at the Alliance for Securing Democracy. That's a bipartisan group based in D.C., which focuses on stopping foreign efforts to undermine democracy. He was in town this week to speak at the National Conference of State Legislatures meeting, and I started our conversation by asking him how at risk we are of having foreign cyber interference in next year's elections.
So we're definitely at risk, but the good news is we're better prepared than we were in 2016, when we were totally caught off guard. But the truth of the matter is that Russia and other governments, everyone from China to Iran to North Korea and other authoritarian regimes, possess cyber capabilities and the motivation to interfere in our elections because, frankly speaking, democracy is inimical to their governments. And if they can destabilize and undermine confidence in our elections, then they've scored a domestic political victory and likely a foreign policy victory as well.
Do different countries take different approaches to trying to disrupt our elections?
So the Russians really wrote the playbook, and now a lot of governments are mimicking those tactics, especially with cyber tools and information operations, where all the information operations that were conducted over social media in the run-up to the 2016 election, that's now being copied by governments like Iran, which targeted the midterm elections using similar tactics.
Are those other countries as good at it as Russia seems to be?
Russia's still the standard bearer, but other governments are catching up. And because they possess capabilities, especially on the cyber side, we should be expecting these threats to come from anyone.
Well, how much more difficult does that make it for American officials both to try to figure out what's going on and stop it, but also then if somebody gets through, figure out who it is?
It does make it more difficult, although on the cyber side, at least, a lot of these governments leave tracks, sometimes intentionally, where, for example, the Russian government will penetrate some of our voting infrastructure to let us know that they're there and that they have the capabilities to, say, manipulate results if they wanted to. Now, there's no evidence that they've done that or that they will, but they want to get inside our heads. And that's what's difficult, because all they have to do is give the impression that they've actually changed some of the voter results without even doing so. And then what?
Well, that's interesting, because Arizona was one of the states where there was news after the election that the Russians had sort of tried to, or maybe to some extent they were successful in getting into the voter registration system. You're saying in that regard, it's not so much to do anything, it's to maybe make us think they can do something.
Exactly. And that's where the information operations come into play. What local officials here in Arizona really should be thinking about is not only addressing some of the cyber vulnerabilities that still remain in our electoral infrastructure, but communicating to the public what exactly they're doing to address them. That way, if there is an operation, let's say the Russians claim that they've changed results but really haven't, at least the public's aware our government has been doing X, Y, and Z to ensure the integrity of the vote here.
What is the balance between letting residents of a given state, Arizona or elsewhere, know what officials are doing, but also not sort of divulging everything they're doing so the Russians know how to get around it?
That's a really good question. I think transparency really is key, because ultimately governments like Russia have almost unlimited resources to be able to direct at undermining our elections. So if we don't address these vulnerabilities in our infrastructure, they're going to penetrate them. If we do, we want a signal to the Russians that we're taking the threat seriously, that we are taking these steps to close gaps.
Is it kind of the opposite of what the Russians and others try to show us, that they're not necessarily trying to change results? They just want us to think that they can. Do we maybe want to just show the Russians that, hey, look, we know that you're onto this and we're taking steps to do it?
Yes. I mean, this really is a psychological operation that's aimed at undermining Americans' confidence in their electoral process without even changing a vote necessarily. And I think that was partly successful in 2016. And I think a similar operation is possible in 2020. It also speaks to the need for political leadership. I know talking about the need for bipartisanship sounds cliche, but it's so important.
So you mentioned that ideally in Congress, Republicans and Democrats would get together to do something. Are there particular things that states and counties and maybe even local governments can and should be doing? We've read about, counties in Arizona, like they don't have, for example, like virus protection software on their computers. Like, are there specific concrete things that states and counties and cities should be doing?
Totally. And obviously sort of basic cyber hygiene, like you just mentioned, is one of them. Another is ensuring that paper ballots are used as backups for electronic systems. So that's an easy fix right there. Another is doing audits of the ballots after the fact to ensure that paper ballot tallies match electronic tallies. So these are sort of almost common sense administrative procedures. Now, some of them require funding, of course, so I don't want to diminish the fact that these require resources, but these are things that state government and localities can do to better ensure the integrity of the electoral process.
Do you get the sense that states are doing that?
More states are doing this than they were in 2016. That's good news. There are still gaps across the country. Not all states are using paper ballots. Not all states are conducting audits after the fact. So those are things that I would encourage state legislators to take seriously into account, especially in the run-up to 2020. But again, it's not just about 2020. This is an ongoing challenge. The threat will adapt. We constantly need to be thinking about new defenses to address new and evolving threats.
When you talk about Congress taking action here, I assume to some extent that includes getting funding to states. But I'm wondering, given where we are in the calendar, how late is too late for that to happen?
In a nutshell, it's already too late for 2020. I mean, to be candid, look, if Washington could pass election security funding now and get those resources to the states, great. But really, I mean, we're now looking at addressing longer-term vulnerabilities. They'll affect 2020, but they'll also affect 2022, 2024. It's wrong to look at each election as a microcosm. I mean, this really is a longer-term challenge.
A cumulative
challenge, exactly. I mean, Russia and other countries are not just trying to elect one particular presidential candidate in one particular election cycle. This is an ongoing long-term threat to destabilize our democratic institutions.
All right. That is David Salvo, Deputy Director at the Alliance for Securing Democracy, based in Washington, D.C. David, thanks for coming in.
Thanks a lot for having me, Mark.